Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Scores of full-time athletes have been dropped from national training programs due to a major budget cut to the National Sports Council, which goes by the Malay acronym MSN. However, the actual number is harder to pinpoint, with some reports putting it at 144, while others citing the figure as high as 253 athletes. Regardless, this large number seems to signal a change in government thinking about funding sports. Was this the right move? Let's ask Malaysian Olympian Nora Sila Mohamed Khalid. She ran the 400-meter hurdles in the 2012 London Olympics, and currently she heads the Malaysian Olympian Association. Nora Sila, let's begin with this recent move to cut full-time athletes. What do you make of it?
The decision made by MSN surely with grounds and reasons. I was not part of the decision-making, but saying so, it must be a mutual decision with all the involved sports stakeholders, especially sport associations. And in sport, it's all about performance. Where and how does this performance come in light is purely a continuous strategic planning and execution, especially by the drivers of the system, the coach and the whole sport system. And of course, to me, when I heard of the news that all these athletes were dropped, especially this year with all the games coming light soon, which is the SEA Games, Asian Games, Commonwealth Games, and in 3 years' time, which is really short to really think about it, in Paris Olympic Games, cutting short the athletes will probably face us a lot of problems just to make sure we have participation in this game. Yeah.
Nora Sila, for us who don't understand the ways, you know, sports operates, right, especially at this level when it's high performance and it's international meets and such, what does cutting funding mean? Does it mean that the athlete a career has come to an end, or do they have now to seek other forms of sponsorship in order to continue their training? What exactly is the impact on the individual athlete as a consequence of this funding cut?
Well, to me, I think after so many years with so many programs that the National Sports Council and also the government KBS develop, yeah. I think it's about time that we make some changes, yeah, definitely. And the change should not be, sorry, my cat, should not be eccentric. It's supposed to be decentralized. It should not be a centralized system. It's best to be decentralized so that everyone has the opportunity to grow the sport, yeah, and we don't rely on one agency. We don't rely on the government only, yeah. So to say, they still can survive, these athletes, and they should actually not relying on one particular organization, which is the government. They should know also sport is also, there is a time period that you can actually participate and compete in sport. And we should also encourage athletes to think about their career. And this is really, really important to me, yeah.
What do you mean by that? Are you saying that funding shouldn't just be dependent on government? Are we thinking about the private sector as an avenue for funding sports development in the country? Are there pros and cons to that?
Definitely. I mean, when we look at elsewhere, especially athletes who is professional, yeah, they don't rely on government funding. And this actually means more sport industry has to drive the sports, yeah. Whereas here in Malaysia, most of the time the drive come from the government. I think it's about time that we change that, yeah. And athletes also should be, we cannot treat athletes as professionals, which is actually a problem here in Malaysia. Sometimes it's like they're actually being funded by the government, but at the same time, they're also being treated as professionals. So we should actually have a guideline on that as well, so that we can grow the sport in a better way. Yeah, and to say that as well, the professionalism should come from the culture itself, and we're missing that. We don't have a sport culture, which actually takes a long time for us to have that. And this means all the sectors, that includes academy, schools, university, and also the sports club should actually be more encouraged to actually establish themselves better.
Priscilla, is there a question of scale? I mean, is Malaysia big enough to support professional sports at a level that will encourage talent into the industry, into the sector? I mean, we compare ourselves to more advanced nations, you know, like the US and all that, where you see high level of professionalism, but it's also based on the fact that there's a huge market and, you know, and sponsors are there with very deep pockets in order to fund sports and individuals in sporting activities. Does Malaysia have some sort of natural limits to what it can do in terms of professionalizing sports?
I think the main organization that should take a lot of responsibility on this is, of course, the sport associations. And how well the sport association drives this to make sure the professionalism and also the sport industry grow is depending on the leaders, people who actually hold the power. And I also feel that small clubs and also academy also can drive this, definitely. What I've seen throughout my career and also until today, even university levels at the university, they can actually create clubs and they can actually generate a lot of athletes. And we've seen this happen at the US, at the state. Universities actually having all this ranking of competition, rank 1, 2, and 3, and they compete. And they actually compete just like competing at the Olympic Games, yeah. And they have so many talented athletes. And as you say, the sponsors and
Priscilla?
The sport... Hello? Yes?
No, please carry on, Priscilla.
Yes. And the sport industry actually grew from that. Yeah. And also broadcasting, how we actually really support the sport from ground to the top, yeah.
Okay, so let's when you look at this piece of news, it doesn't, at least from what I'm hearing from you, it doesn't sound like you're very critical of it. You're saying that this is a natural consequence of the decisions about what are the priorities. Can you help us understand, if you had a look at some of these numbers, do you have a sense of what government priorities are at this point in time? Where will we head in terms of sports development?
Honestly, I don't know. I seriously don't know. But I think both ways, yeah. As I said earlier, sport is all about performance, yeah. If we don't actually achieve the performance, yeah, and sadly to say, athlete has to actually take responsibility on all the performances that they actually achieve, and we cannot just blame the athlete, yeah, it's the whole structure, the whole ecosystem that goes to coaches, sport associations, the support systems, sport science, and everything else. But we have been spending a lot on all this, yeah. And we have been doing the same thing over and over again, year by year. What I'm saying is how they cut the number to this total number of 144 athletes, there must be a reason, yeah, definitely. And we should know about it, definitely. And what is next? I think what the answer should be how we actually overcome this. Who will represent the country? How are we going to develop sports without these athletes?
Coming back to something you said a little bit in the earlier in the interview, you mentioned that Malaysia doesn't have a sports culture. We haven't built a sports culture. It's going to take a long time for us to do that. I'm just wondering the impact of this budget cut, of the funding cuts, of cutting all these athletes. What kind of impact do you think this will have on us building that sports culture? And more importantly, you know, should that be a priority in us recovering from the pandemic and the economic slowdown?
Well, if we want to blame the situation that we are all facing now throughout the world, yeah, the COVID-19, yeah, looking at the results that we've seen in Tokyo Olympic Games, we've seen a lot of great results. There's a lot of world-class results, world record, yeah, Olympic record. What actually makes us, what holds us? Why can't we also achieve something like that? I think we shouldn't make a lot of excuses, yeah. And having all the situation that we are facing now, it should actually give us, it should be a challenge, and we should find the best solution for all this. And just having the simplest way is just to blame performances is not good enough. We should also ask ourselves, especially the administrative and also those people that are actually responsible for the performances, are we actually doing the right thing?
Right. Nurhasila, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Malaysian Olympian Nurhasila Mohamad Khalid there. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to consider this. Thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. However, if you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing the deep budget cuts to the sports sector, resulting in the National Sports Council dropping scores of full-time professional athletes. Joining us now, we have sports journalist Harish Deol. He's the co-founder and editor of the news site 2213. Harish, let's talk a little bit about the reasons why there was a budget cut in the first place. The idea was to channel the funds to post-pandemic recovery efforts. And I'm just wondering whether you think this was the right move in terms of government spending priorities.
Let's establish first that why the elite program was not budgeted in the 2022 budget. There was that flaw there, and no one is now coming up front to say who was responsible for not including that budget in the 2022 budget. So that's the first thing. And second thing, obviously, there will be budget cuts all around due to the pandemic, due to the floods, and a host of other, stimulus programs that the government has embarked on. So naturally, there will be budget cuts, and sports is usually the first to receive or to be impacted by such budget cuts.
Harish, why is it that sport is the first to receive those cuts? I mean, do you think that policymakers think less of sports as a component in national priorities? I mean, why exactly Would you say that? I mean, does that come as a surprise to you?
Look, budget cuts happen, and sports is often the first to be at the receiving end, simply because a lot of people do not seem to understand what sports is all about. When it comes to an athlete winning a gold medal, you'd see every single politician jumping on the bandwagon. However, when it comes to the financing of sports or any such initiatives, whether it's for the elite or the masses, it's always the first to be sidelined. And I think it's the same with the arts and culture as well, industries in the country. So, yeah, it's actually a question that we need to ask the policymakers. Do they really understand the power and the impact of sports? Or do they think of just sports as just being another entertainment, so to speak?
Right. What do you understand to be the reasons or the rationale? Is there any, you know, can you make head or tail over who has been cut and why they've been cut? It seems to me that not all sports are, you know, equal in the eyes of policymakers or budget deciders.
Look, I think, Melissa, we need to establish first that there was a budget cut to begin with. Why? Because there was no peruntukkan, no allocation in the budget 2022. That's number one. As a result of that, 144 athletes who were deemed they were not performing, so to speak, were axed from the list. Obviously, due to the budget cuts, there will be a shift in the form of resources. And as such, instead of the Ministry of Finance or the powers that be at the Sports Ministry, being answerable to this, we see the National Sports Council, the funding arm of the ministry, being the main target for this. That's not entirely correct and fair for them, because they are merely, playing with the finances based on what they receive at the end of the term.
Harish?
So that's a problem there. Yeah.
Harish, do you think this was an oversight when it came down to budget allocations? And if you remember allocations last year, it was in the middle of a very fraught political period for our country. Was this an oversight, you reckon? And the athletes paying for it?
Well, Melissa, I from what I've been informed, yes, I think there was a massive oversight. And if the ministry can deny this, I mean, please put it on record. Just like how they should put on record that why the recommendation from the Podium Program Enhancement Committee has not been made public, why the National Sports Vision 2030 has still not been made public, why the accounts of the 2017 SEA Games have still not been made public. So please make public to why there's this disparity in the allocation, thus resulting in 144 athletes being axed. Yes, true, some of them did not perform. But if there was an allocation, or there was supposed to be an allocation, then we wouldn't be seeing 144 athletes being axed. So yes, I would love to hear answers from the respective authorities, especially from the Youth and Sports Ministry.
So Harish, I mean, what you're suggesting is basically poor governance. And it's something that plagues much of government in Malaysia and all kinds of sectors. But mm-hmm. when it comes to budgets, we know mm-hmm. that, you know, there's a longstanding way around this, around the problem, which is a supplementary budget. And governments often go back to parliament and add more to the budget, right? So mm-hmm. if there was a supplementary budget, you know, whether they admit mm-hmm. it or not, that there was an oversight on their part, I mean, this can be corrected if they think it's necessary.
Sharad, I'll direct that question to someone from the ministry, and I hope that person would answer it. Because we've been finding for that answers as well. Why was there a budget cut to begin with? Was it allocated? Was it not allocated? Why was it not allocated? These are questions that remain unanswered till today. And we've seen this tradition, especially in these recent days, years in fact, whereby silence is somehow golden. They just refuse to answer questions. We as taxpayers demand to know. If you say there are budget cuts, then budget cuts should be across the board. Why is it that this morning the FA of Malaysia received 10 million ringgit from the government? What makes football so special? What about the other 144 athletes?
Right. Well, funding has always been an issue within sports development, and I think relying on the government only for funds can also, have some of its own problems. I'm just wondering, Harish, whether there is a way for sports to be developed without relying completely on government funding.
Sorry, Misa, I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that?
Sorry, whether there is a way for sports to be developed without relying completely on government funding solely.
Okay, Melissa, that's a question that we've been trying to answer for decades. Now, we have to look at our system. We are too much of a handout. We are living in a pretty much a handout system whereby the association still, till today, despite the word professionalism, they like to bandy that word around, but despite that, till today, they are still not self-sufficient. So it's a very simple concept whereby if you're still staying under your dad's roof, you follow his rules and you just accept the pocket money he gives you. It's the same with what's happening in Malaysian sports. Until and unless sports associations generally start standing on their own feet and derive some form of income and monetize their efforts, their athletes, their activities, only then we would see some form of breakaway and more independence in the form of the way they manage their funds. Till that happens, with the exception of the handful of sports like perhaps the FA of Malaysia, and still yet they got the 10 million funds, and the BA of Malaysia, Badminton Association of Malaysia, the other sports associations generally do not have the financial means to stand on their own, to send athletes out. So that is the real problem, and thus they hunger for government money.
Harish, just moving slightly ahead, taking the conversation a little further, which has to do with, athletes' welfare. Because I wonder what happens to, all these athletes who have suddenly been dropped, whether they were warned, whether there's a kind of a period in which, they have to make these adjustments for themselves. But also this really stunning bit of news, and it's a bit sensational, which is of the story of this Paralympic athlete who, won many medals and now is having to peddle tissue paper in order to survive. I mean, is there no thinking about the long-term, welfare of athletes by these associations, by government, when they think about sports?
Okay, Sharad, let's be fair here, yeah? There are avenues for athletes to request for some form of assistance, and there are programs within the ministry where that supports athletes. If they, let's say, for example, they want to advance their career, they would like, to get a scholarship or to study. So there are options. There is such help within the ministry, more specifically within the National Sports Council. I know for a fact that some of these athletes have refused such assistance because some of them believe they need more or they are entitled to more. Some have declined positions, for example, but there are others who claim they've been left from the system. Now, this is something that if true, they've been left out, then this needs to be addressed. If you're talking specifically to the Paralympian, I believe the former Deputy Sports Minister, Youth and Sports Minister, Steven Sim, had clarified the issue on his social media account, saying that he had extended assistance. And, we can all read it on his Twitter. So it right. really depends on right. case-to-case basis, but there are avenues out there for athletes.
Okay, I do want to ask you though, because there's a lot of talk about the potential, the number of medals that have been won. Is it right mm-hmm. to tie funding based or funding and support based on medals won or the potential to win medals?
Okay, for me, for example, medal per se is not the only or sole benchmark for funding. It should be based on consistency, it should be based on progress. However, medal is often used as the barometer or the benchmark simply because it's easier to justify. An athlete gets X amount of medals and he or she deserves funding. If you fail to get a medal, you don't receive funding. However, you need to look at the timing, for example. You need to look at the performance. You need to understand that their peers in the region have all progressed. So what's the use of supporting someone who may have won two gold medals back-to-back, but the timing's nothing to shout about compared to a person who's got potential, but yet because of their peers in this region or perhaps in the world, you know, they are they have progressed. So that particular athlete is then left out. That shouldn't be the way. I believe there should be another way to formulate to ensure that there is, which is not open to abuse as well.
Thank you so much, Harish Deol of 2213. No worries. There, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.